Okay. Good afternoon. Shalom Aleichem. Nice to be back at Yeshiva. So, the topic of the role of women in halacha is a big contemporary issue, and one that is certainly appropriate for this course in contemporary halacha. One also which requires a lot of sensitivity, certain amount of nuance, and a lot of yediyus in order to be able to navigate the myriad of issues that arise properly and responsibly. There is a sense that times have changed in the world in general. Do you have a question? Okay. That the role of women in the world is different from the way it used to be not even so long ago, from 100 years ago, from 50 years ago. Even somebody who would be a student of American culture, who would look at your standard sitcoms on television 50 years ago when it was mutter to watch television, and would see the dynamic between husband and the wife in a show like I Love Lucy or Father Knows Best and the like, would see that the woman's role is much more domesticated, much more the sense of the mother, the wife, the homemaker. There wasn't such a sense of a woman being out in the workplace, of a woman being a partner in a law firm, of a woman being a CEO of a company. Sure, it happened. But it wasn't at all commonplace. It was much more the yotzeit min haklal. And certainly the notion of a woman playing a leadership position and getting up in public and giving public addresses and being a leader of a company and things of that sort was not only something that wasn't present in the culture of halacha, but it wasn't present in the culture of society in general. Well, society has changed quite a bit, and nowadays it's fair to say that based on the notion of egalitarianism, equality, women's rights movement, feminism, just changing tides in society, some of them economic in nature, the reality is that women are much more present nowadays in terms of leadership roles, in terms of the corporate community, and in terms of positions of public stature and public limelight and of leadership. And the big question is whether this is something which is purely societal in nature. And just like the secular society has changed in this regard, so too halacha also recognizes these types of changes and shifts in society, or whether, from a halachic perspective, there is some type of a clearly delineated role that has to be maintained, even as the world around us changes, within the framework of halacha in terms of defining, demarcating, and circumscribing the roles of women. Much has changed in the realm of women learning Torah, for example, over the last 100 years, where women are given actual formal education in Torah, something which didn't happen hundreds of years ago, which came about as a change that was initiated really through the Beis Yaakov movement up until this day, not in modern Orthodox movement, really very much within what is the mainstream Haredi world. And there's a question even in terms of how we understand the contours of that development of women learning Torah more. And in connection with women learning Torah more, is there more of a role for women to play in terms of Torah leadership positions? So this is the first point that I would like to touch upon. And from there, I would like to expand to other horizons of the discussion as well. So it's interesting, when I came to Chicago, I met with the Rosh Hashiva of Telus, of Avraham Chaim Levine Shlita, and we were talking about YU, because he knew that I came from YU, and there's also a YU kollel in the Chicago community. And he told me that he very much respects the YU kollel and all the learning that it does and all the teaching that it does. He only has one small quibble with the YU kollel. I said, what's that quibble? He says that the kollel members teach Torah Shebaal Peh to women. And he's not a believer that one should teach Torah Shebaal Peh to women, to teach Gemara to women. So I said I know there's we have a discussion about that in the poskim. It starts from the Mishnah and Gemara and Sota. It's a machlokas tanoim, whether it's appropriate for a father to teach his daughter's Torah. And we paskin like the Deya in the Gemara that call Melamed Esbito Torah Kiilu Melam the Tiflus. That anybody who teaches Torah to his daughter, it's as if he has taught her Tiflus. It's as if he has taught her some type of improper education. So that's the simple text of the Gemara, but the halacha becomes more nuanced. When the Rambam codifies the halacha, the Rambam makes it clear that this is a problem for rov nashim. For most women, if they're going to learn Torah, perhaps they'll learn it too superficially, and they won't be able to apply it in a proper fashion of understanding. And the Rambam also limits it to Torah Shebaal Peh, but if it's Torah Shebichtav, so the Chatchila, that's not something that is encouraged, but it certainly is not equivalent to being Malamed or Tiflus. So the Prisha, in his commentary on the Torah, picks up on these two different aspects of the limitation. Of number one, that it's Rov Nashim, and number two, that it's the father who can't teach the daughter because of the fact that most women are going to take the teaching perhaps out of context in a fashion that would be illegitimate or immoral. So the Prisha says this is only for Rov Nashim, where it's presumed that they're not going to learn it on a nuanced enough level to take the proper understanding out of it. But if you have a woman who demonstrates a thirst and a desire for learning Torah, and who demonstrates a responsibility and a maturity to be able to digest the words properly, so such a woman 100% can learn Torah. So that's the first caveat that is a major limitation towards the prohibition. And then the second caveat really is found from the Ramah, who says, well, of course, a woman is supposed to learn those things that are chiyuv for the women to learn. So the Chofetz Chaim, in his Likutei Halachos commentary to Maseches Sota, points out that it used to be the case that most women would learn everything that they needed to know from simply living at home and watching what went on in their homes. But he's writing already in the late 19th, early 20th century, the Chofetz Chaim said that's no longer the case, even in Europe, even in idealized Europe. The Chofetz Chaim says that the women were not necessarily getting a full Torah education in their homes, and that they were surrounded by such a secular society and exposed to secular education in that society. So if anything, they were becoming completely secularized, and it was necessary for them to get a Torah education. Granted, he circumscribed it more within the realm of Torah Shebichtav and things that weren't Gemara type learning, but within a certain type of context, the Chofetz Chaim promoted, and this was really what lent legitimacy to the Beis Yaakov movement. The Chofetz Chaim promoted the notion of formalized Torah education for women. So I pointed out to Rabbi Levine that the Rav Soloveitchik took it a step further And the Rav felt that as women became much more well-educated and much more sophisticated in terms of general culture and in terms of general secular studies, so the Rav felt that in order for a woman to be inculcated with a sense of chashivas haTorah, of a sense of the grandeur of Torah living, it was important for her to receive the same type of sophisticated education when it came to Torah learning, and not merely some type of superficial Torah education that would not be as intense as that which would be offered to the males, their male counterparts. The Chofetz Chaim had recommended Chumash and Nevi'im and Ksuvim and Musrei Chazal and Maseches Avos and Menorah Samaur and some Svarim that were designed specifically for women, kind of like, you know, on the level of Tzen or Reno, the Medrash says, or, you know, things of that sort. The Rav said, we're living in more in times in which women are exposed to more sophisticated education. And in a letter to the head of the New York Board of Jewish Education in 1953, this is a letter that he wrote to Rabbi Leonard Rosenfeld. The Rav responded to Rabbi Leonard Rosenfeld's query as to how it is that women should be educated. And the Rav said as follows, as to your question with regard to a curriculum in a co-educational school, leaving aside for the moment the issues relating to co-educational schools and when they are or are not appropriate, the Rav said, I expressed my opinion to you long ago that it would be a very regrettable oversight on our part if we were to arrange separate Hebrew courses for girls. Not only is the teaching of Torah Shabbat to girls permissible, writes the Rav, but it is nowadays an absolute imperative. The policy of discrimination between the sexes as the subject matter and method of instruction, which is still advocated by certain groups within our Orthodox community, has contributed greatly to the deterioration and downfall of traditional Judaism. Boys and girls alike should be introduced into the inner halls of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a very strong, sweeping statement by the Rav that was made 60 years ago. Just to show you how much we've progressed, if I made that statement today and said that it was coming out of my mouth, not the Rav's mouth, I would probably get stoned. But nonetheless, the Rav said it. So what did the Rav mean? Some say what the Rav meant was an expansion of what the Chofetz Chaim had said, namely that women weren't getting the education automatically, and essentially it's an expansion of the principle that was enunciated by the Rama, that a woman has to learn those things that are necessary for her to learn. It was more of a change in education than a change in halacha, as Rabbi Twersky eloquently expressed it in an article that he wrote on this subject. Yes?
Like for a more sophisticated or intense Torah education, can they just have done like more intense, let's say, like Shava, or, I don't know, like, there's a lot of, not a couple, like, can you,
So it may be that it depends on the institution, and it depends on the community. It depends on the type of education the woman is getting in general. If you look at, there's an article that a couple of the relatives of the Rav wrote on this subject, both Rabbi Twersky and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. You'll find the articles in the materials. And one of the points that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein makes is that one of the components of a Torah education, what a person really needs in order to know what to do, is not only that they learn about Shabbos, and that they learn about Kashrus, and that they learn about Brachos, but also that they learn to be instilled with a Yiras Shemayim. He says that sometimes if a woman is on a high level of educational sophistication, she's not going to get the Yiras Shemayim in terms of what the Torah is all about if it's not taught to her with a methodology of sophistication. This was a large part of the message that was being conveyed by the Rav. So it was not a halachic innovation, just like the Chofetz Chaim was not changing the halacha, but it is a new application of, number one, the Rama, who talks about a woman needing to learn that which will cause her to be frum, and that which will cause her to be inspired, that which will cause her to be inspired to raise an additional generation of Torah observance Jews, and this is what is necessary in order to properly provide that inspiration. And number two, the notion really that was articulated by the Prisha, that if you have a woman who on her own expresses a thirst for higher level learning, and I think that many of the higher level educational institutions that are provided for women nowadays, whether it's Nishmat, whether it's the Stern College Masters in a Talmud program called the GPATS. I don't know what GPATS stands for, but it's called GPATS, that also teaches them Torah Shebaal Peh and teaches them Gemara on a high level, that if you have women who express an explicit interest to be educated in this regard, so then that certainly is appropriate education for a woman from a Torah perspective. And the Torah Tamima, actually, in his commentary to Parshas Ekev, talks about this subject a little bit, and he found a sefer called Mayan Ganim from Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan Yaakov HaKaval Balti. He says, he doesn't know who this Mechaber is, but he likes what he writes. The Torah Tamima often incorporates a lot of chidushim from other sources that he likes very much. But this is along the lines of what the Prisha was getting at, and he says as follows. He says that, Amnam anashim asher nadav liban osana lekarva el ha-malacha malachas Hashem mitzah b'chirasan b'tov. B'mashi hu tov, that they're inspired on their own to learn Torah on a high level. Hein heina talena be'ar Hashem tishkayna b'makum kacho ki neshem ofes heina. He calls them neshem ofes. He calls them incredible, wonderful women. V'chachmei doron. And he says that the chachamim of each door have a responsibility towards such women. La'adran, la'hadran, la'sadran, la'chazik yideyan, la'ametz ro'oseyan v'chule. That they have to be encouraged, they have to be assisted, and they have to be elevated in terms of being able to reach the heights that they strive to, that they strive for. In terms of their Torah learning, asiva atzlichim in hashemayim esayuchem, and he says that lo noda lana mihu mechaber nichbar ezek. He doesn't know who this mechaber is, but then he points out that the Tosfos Yontov apparently speaks highly of him in Maseches Tamid, that he wrote some sefer on Diktuk Lashon HaKodesh called Aruga Sabosim. So he gives his bona fides. But this is a perspective that really is essentially consistent with the attitude of the Prisha, that the Torah never prohibited educating women in Torah Shebaal Peh with respect to the women who are self-inspired. So based on these two considerations of what it takes nowadays for women to know what to do and to be inspired what to do, to have even Yiras Shamayim, and number two, the fact that many women are self-inspired when it comes to Torah education, this really seems to provide for a basic legitimization of teaching Gemara to women. So I pointed all this out to Rabbi Levine in our meeting. So he gave me an interesting response. He said he thinks that the Gemara was written by men for men. Which I don't think would go over so well in all circles. What he said was that it wasn't completely off the wall. He said that, you know, the pasuk in Yisrael that says, Kosama leves Yaakov isageh lebnei Yisrael, that when the Torah was given to Har Sinai, so Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to speak be'amir araka, in soft, gentle words to the Beis Yaakov, to the women who were, you know, learning in Beis Yaakov, to the women, who are referred to as Beis Yaakov, hence the name Beis Yaakov. And v'sageh l'vnei Yisrael, dvarim kashim kegidin l'zacharim, that for the men, that you're supposed to speak tough. So he says that the Gemara was written for men, and therefore it's written in a tough fashion. And since it's written in a tough fashion, for women, they're supposed to get a miraka. They're not going to get the requisite amiraka in the presentation of the Gemara. So I mentioned this actually to Rabbi Twersky, who said it's an interesting argument, but let him bring some proofs. You know, where do we find the araya That there are any places in the Gemara where it's written specifically Kidvarim HaKashim Kigidin in ways that we may have presented it a little bit differently if our audience was intended to be women. I'm not sure. However, I thought it was an interesting response, so therefore worthy of mention in this particular presentation. However, I think it begs for a raya. And if you look at the writings of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Moshe has a tshuva, Chelek Dalet of Orach Chaim, Simen Mem Tes, where he writes about the Noshim She'anonos, writes about the women who She'anonos is an interesting word that he chose from Pesukim Yeshayo, could go in either direction, could refer to brazen women or could refer to inspired women. So he chose it very purposefully, because he's speaking about women who are motivated to do more mitzvos than that which they're strictly commanded to fulfill. And he says that it could be a wonderful thing because we paskin, even like Rabbeinu Tam in the Ashkenazi community, that a woman can volunteer to do mitzvah esei shezman groma, that she's not obligated to perform and even make brachos. She can even say asher kedushanim tzavit sivanu on the fulfillment of such mitzvos. Unlike the tradition of the Rambam, who held that a woman couldn't make brachos, or Ravadi Yosef is very strong against some recent Sephardic poskim who have also suggested there might be wiggle room even for Sephardic women to make brachas. Rav Avadya Yosef shut the lid on that and said that's completely not acceptable in our community, but in the Ashkenazi community, certainly that has been accepted. And Rav Moshe writes that for women who are motivated by very sincere intentions of wanting to increase the Yerush Shemayim and come close to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, it's important to note that women have exactly the same level of Kedusha as men. And his proof text that women have the same level of Kedusha as men is the same proof text that was cited by the Tells of Rosh Yeshiva, namely the Psukim of Kosamah Leves Yaakov Isagei Libnei Yisrael, that are references to both women and men, immediately precede the Psukim in the Torah that say, Vatem Tiyuli Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, that you should be a Goy Kadosh to me. So we see, says Rav Moshe, that those Psukim are referring equally to men and women, and therefore we see the men and women are on exactly the same high level of Kedusha. And therefore, women, in order to actualize that Kedusha, feel a desire to keep certain mitzvos, even though they have the Kedusha without keeping the mitzvos, since they're not obligated to keep all of the mitzvos, they're certainly welcome to do so, says Rav Moshe, provided that it's really for the motivation of Kedusha. And this is a common theme in many of the discussions of the poskim, of the issues relating to contemporary halachic practice for women, is what is the motivation? Is the motivation, in fact, to increase the Kedusha? Or is the motivation because they want to promote notions of feminism that lay outside of the halachic framework and perhaps even perform types of actions that would be prohibited according to halacha, such as serving as a shliach tzibur, which a woman can't do, being part of a minyan, a woman can't do, etc., etc. So therefore, one has to be extremely careful about the motivations. That's the theme of Rav Moshe's tshuva. See, if you look in the first tshuva I'll take questions in just a minute from those who had their hands up. If you look in the first tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eger in his Shiloh Sutshuvos, so in his very first tshuva in Orach Chaim, he speaks about the obligation of women, if there is one, to make Kiddush on Yontif, because in Shabbos the women are obligated in Kiddush based on a hekesh of Zachar v'Shamor. There's no such hekesh with respect to Yontif, so they're not strictly obligated when it comes to Yontif, he says. But then he has in a footnote, it's very interesting because it's talk of a footnote, it's not in the actual tshuva, it's in the Hashmatos in the back. So in the Hashmatos of the first tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eger, he writes that that women nowadays have accepted upon themselves as essentially an obligation, certain mitzvos esei shezman groma. And he includes within them the less obvious example of Kiddush on Yontif. Then he adds a shofar and sukkah and lulav. The truth of the matter is, I don't know if all women are some medak take to bench lulav all 7 days of sukkahs, for example. But he gives these as, or to eat in the sukkah all the time. But he gives these as examples. This is going back, a couple of 100 years ago, in which he was talking about women who were not subject to the feminist movement per se, or anything of that sort, but where women just were inspired because of their deep devotion, their deep love for Torah and mitzvahs, that they wanted to accept upon themselves, even almost as a quasi-obligation, the performance of these various mitzvahs. I see a couple of you had your hands up, so I'll take a couple of questions. Yeah.
According to Prisha, would that be a problem if a school makes that as a curriculum for students that they have to learn tomorrow first, because that's not necessarily what they may not be motivated themselves, they're just doing it because that's what they have to, the school tells them that.
So this is a good question. The Prisha wasn't talking about any kind of a structured school system. That came much later. It was something that the Chafetz Chaim spoke about, and also in a more limited context. But the Prisha was talking about women who are just very motivated. Now, you can say that in a school setting, it really is on some level a fulfillment of the Prisha, because you can say that if you live in a society in which women are all being educated and all have an interest in being educated and in receiving even higher education so that they can be eligible for high-level jobs that require an educational degree. So the women, even from an early age, are evidencing being part of the group that is identified by the Prisha as those women who have their own independent educational striving. So you'll say, but part of the svara is that each woman is showing that she's yotze min harov, that she is somehow departing from the majority of women for whom this education would not be appropriate. So there you could say, well, maybe it doesn't have to be a rove of all the women who are in this generation. Maybe it's a rove of women throughout history. Or maybe each community has to be analyzed differently in terms of what educational striving exists. But there's an easier response, which is that I don't think that it necessarily is the case that one has to start out, teaching the Ktosis and the Rav Chaims to women, who are in third or fourth and fifth grade any more than one is doing the same with the boys. It's when we speak about a basic education, for one who is starting off school, we're speaking about a basic education so that they'll know what to do, just like we'd give the basic education for the boys to know what to do. And then over time, there emerges those who express more of an interest to learn on a higher and more complex and more sophisticated level. And for those who indicate that desire, they should certainly be accommodated. But what I think certain contemporary thinkers and poskim would say, those who are along the lines of the Rav's psak, they would say that you have to, even without the woman coming forward and expressing the interest herself, a certain modicum of high-level instruction, even including Torah Shebaal Peh, should be given over to every single girl who's part of a community where there'll be such an emphasis upon sophisticated education, that the way for her to receive her Yiras Shemayim will only be if she receives an education on that order and on that high level. And that maybe if you're dealing with certain types of communities where the women are getting that sense of Yiras Shemayim and mission and responsibility more in the home, then you wouldn't have the same need to convey it in the classroom. But in those communities where that can't be assumed, then one should be applying it more in the classroom. You also get the sense, and I think that you get this from some of the Talmidim of the Rav, including the late Rabbi Walter Wurzberger, for example, that maybe part of the Rav, what the Rav was saying, and this is, I think, subject to debate, but part of what the Rav was saying was that it's not even such a bad thing to encourage a woman to want to be on that level of sophistication. That if there's a choice of how you're going to inspire a woman, bizman hazeh, that one would perhaps be better off inspiring their daughters and their family members to have more of a thirst for higher level Torah education, even in the realm of Torah Shebaal Peh. And yes, indeed, in Achinami, if they don't evidence it, then it's not something that one necessarily should pursue, but that it's not a bad thing to give them that sense of taste and that sense of thirst, particularly to cope in the modern era where we are in a society that does promote accomplishment, educational and academic accomplishment for women, and the more that they have that accomplishment in the Torah realm, perhaps the more fulfilled they will be and the more capable they will be of being able to inspire future generations who live in this society as well. Yes?
So it seems like a key big side point, it seems to be within the opinion that Kiddush Shan Yontif is Daraisa, right? Because if it's Darabanan, then the whole question falls away. It's just the Darabanan.
His discussion regarding Kiddush Shan Yontif is a very fascinating and not necessarily intuitive discussion. I'm just mentioning it almost as a matter of historical interest, that that's the context in which he wrote the Tshuva, but in Achinami it is very interesting. Yes.
I'm sorry to minimize questions for him.
Okay, so we'll hold off on other questions so we can take this to the next step. Now, let's say you have a woman now who has been accomplished in this regard and who has, you know, been learning Torah on a high level. Now, a woman who has that type of a thirst might also have a thirst to do something with it. And this is what leads to, you know, the next contemporary question of what types of roles are available. What about a woman who wants to be a Torah teacher? Well, to be a Torah teacher, to be a Mora, obviously, is a time-honored profession. We have Moras whom we value all the time. That's not considered to be a problematic position of status or stature, per se. But what if it's more of a leadership position, a woman to be a school principal, a woman to be a Rosh Hashiva, a woman to be a rabbi, a woman to be a yoetzet halacha, where she gets a certificate that she's trained in a certain area, and she can, of taras ha-mishpacha, and she can inspire other women. Are there positions that become problematic? Are there positions that are good? Are there positions where the questions are vague? So if you look in the various, you know, sources, from going back to the Gemara, going back to the Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch, and so forth, the Rambam, so you discover that there are essentially three issues that always need to be analyzed whenever this question is asked of a specific role, a specific position for women. And then there's a fourth technical consideration. The three issues that always need to be examined are Srara, number one. Is it permissible for a woman to have a position of Srara, of leadership, of being in a position of authority? And if so, what constitutes Srara? That's number one. Number two, a second issue is Tznius. It's a general principle of Atznei Alecha Sim Elokecha. When it comes to tznius, the Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Ayin Vav and elsewhere seems to indicate that we even determine halachos based on notions that women have a higher level of obligation or a higher level of fulfillment that is specifically designated to them in the arena of tznius than that which is applicable to men. And that we have a principle, Kokavuda Bas Melech Penima, that Halacha generally favors Tznius in all of our behavior, in all of our actions, Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Mem Tes, Summer Base, as even in public affairs, we're supposed to behave in a Tznur fashion, Kal Vachomer, when it comes to private affairs, but all the more so when it comes to women. This is the reason why the prohibition of Moabi below of marrying with from the people of Moab or Ammon, even if they convert, is only a prohibition against marrying their males, but not the females. From the, this is what enabled Rusa Moabia to marry within the nation, to marry Boaz, because of Ammoni below Ammonis, Moabi below Moabis. And this is because when Bnei Yisrael passed through Ammon and Moab, the men of Amon and Moab were punished for not offering them food and drink, but the women were not punished for that reason, because the women are not ein derech, you know, of women. Even non-Jewish women, the Gemara says, it's a notion of women, that it's not the derech of women to go out and to leave their homes and to go into the public sphere with food and drink. So the Gemara says, okay, so they didn't have to offer the food and drink to the men. They could have offered the food and the drink to the women. So the Gemara says, after a long analysis, the Gemara says, no, even with respect to that kasha, we said, kol kavuda bas melech penima. Then in terms of establishing the halachic norms, at least that refer to Benos Yisrael, we have a principle of kol kavuda bas melech penima. And as Rashi and Erev and Daf Kuf points out, sometimes even if this might seem like an inconvenience, or sometimes this might seem like a burden. Nonetheless, this is a Torah principle that needs to be followed. The Gemara refers to the Eser Klolos of Chava. So one of them is Chavusha Beveis Asurin, which sounds pretty bad. She's locked up in jail. And Rashi says, yeah, because Kol Kavuda Bas Melech Penima. It's an astonishing comment. The Rashi, Kol Kavuda Bas Melech Penima, is meant to Chavusha Beveis Asurin. So Mistama. The pshat is sometimes even when based on the door and based on the setting and based on the circumstance, it feels like Abusha Vivesa So Yisasurin. Nonetheless, the norm and the idea of Sneas is so important that it has to be maintained. And then the third consideration that has to be taken into account is the consideration of Mesorah, that whenever you do things that might be a little bit different from the way in which they may have been done in the past, you have to make sure that you are consulting with Gedolim and Poskim of the caliber of the Chofetz Chaim and the Rav. Like, for example, when it came to changing the formal structure of women's Torah education, you have to deal with Poskim on that caliber when it comes to answering any of these issues if you talk about carving out new types of roles. And when it comes to Sorora, the reality, as Rav Moshe Feinstein points out in his Tshuvos, is that the halakha is a little bit vague. Now, I would submit, though perhaps this is a revolutionary idea, maybe sometimes the halakha was constructed in such a way as to be deliberately vague in order to allow for flexibility based on different times and different circumstances. So that it's not to per se that we don't fully grasp it, but that there is a certain amount of flexibility because this is an issue that requires flexibility. So the Rambam has a drasha that where the Medrash Halacha says on the pasuk in Devarim, Sefer Devarim, Som Tasim Alecha Melech, and the Medrash Halacha says, the Sifrei says Melech Velo Malka. It means that you can appoint a king, but you can't appoint a queen. We don't appoint queens. We only appoint kings. That this is so too, b'chein komasimos. So too, this is true, says the Rambam, with respect to any position of sarara, that a woman is not allowed to assume any position of sarara. So Rav Moshe points out that this medrash halacha cited by the Rambam isn't found in the Sifrei. Sifrei just says melech v'lo malka. It doesn't say b'chein komasimos. It doesn't say, and so too all other positions of Sarara. Right? So he suggests that maybe not everybody agrees with the Rambam about this. You'll find Medrash Tanaim of Sukta Zatrasi. You will find certain more obscure Midrashim, and many of them weren't published until around the time of the Rambam anyway. So Moshe says, no, if they were published around this time, so it could be that others are not necessarily bound by it. And Rav Moshe brings Raios that the Sefer Achinoch didn't hold like the Rambam. The Sefer Achinoch says with respect to a ger, where the Gemara says very clearly in Kiddushin Daf Ayin Vav and elsewhere that all positions of authority, lo suchal seis alecha ish nachri, that this is applicable to all positions of authority, to all things that are bekerav achecha, that all things that kol mesimos, that you would place upon yourself are applicable to a ger, that a ger is not allowed to have any position or sarara, but the Sefer Chinuch does not have that limitation with respect to a woman. And when the Sefer Chinuch talks about the mitzvah of Minoy HaMelech, and he says that Melech v'lo Malka, he ends the discussion over there, and he doesn't elaborate To say that this is applicable to other positions, that they would be off limits to a woman, despite the fact that the Rambam is very detailed. Later on in the very same halacha, when he says that the position of Malchus goes B'Yerusha, he says, oh yeah, and other positions of Sarara also go B'Yerusha. So in the same mitzvah, when the Sefer Achinuch is discussing Melech V'lo Malka, he discusses other positions of Sarara in a Yerusha context, but in the context of Melech V'lo Malka, he does not extend the discussion to other Mesimos, to other positions of Sarara. Ramoshe has a lengthy discussion in which he claims that the Tosus and the Ran and others also hold like the Sefer Achinuch, that there are many Mishodim who hold not like the Rambam, that other positions of Svara are off limits to women, and they would hold that they're not off limits to women. The specific case that Rav Moshe was discussing highlights some of the question marks with respect to what constitutes Svara. So Moshe says Svara doesn't mean a glorified position or status. It means a position where you have authority over Balabatim. You have authority to tell people what to do. Like the Gemara talks about Reish Gargusa. It talks about somebody who has authority to tell the storekeepers how to maintain their weights and measures. Somebody has authority to determine where the canals that are carrying the water through town should be directed so that this person decides which homeowner gets how much water to water their crops. So somebody who has authority over the Balabatim, says Rav Moshe, that's what constitutes Sarara. So he had a question about a rabbi in Arebitzin, where the rabbi had a position of hashkacha. He was a mashkiach. He got paid good money, and at least enough to make a living, and now he passed away, and the Oman, in order to make money, wanted to be able to continue working as a mashkicha. So the question was, could she do that, or was that a problem of Sarara? So Moshe says he thinks that is a problem of Sarara, to be a mashkiach, to be a mashkicha. What more exalted position can there be than that? So he says, so why do I consider that to be exalted? Because you're supposed to tell the Balabatim what to do. You say, you can't sell this product. You have to kosher this. This is treif. This is kosher. You tell them what to do, what they can serve, what they can make, what they can't make, how they go about making it, and so forth. So that's a position of Sarara, says Rav Moshe. So he says that if a woman's not allowed to occupy a position of Sarara, she can't do that. And he says that if we paskin like the Rambam, it's off limits to her. But he said that if you're dealing with an almana, you're dealing with a shas of chak situation, she's not going to be able to make a living. So then there's room to be somech on the other poskim. But then he writes that since the Rambam came out and held this way, and we don't take the Rambam lightly, it's not covenant Shulchan Aruch at all. We don't take the Rambam lightly. So says Rav Moshe, therefore, we should try to be Mekayim the Rambam even in those situations where we find room to be Mekel. How do we go about doing that? So he said that you have a technical mechanism in place where the official Mashgiach is, say, the Rav of the community, and he is technically and formally the supervisor of this woman. She's going to do all the work. But in the event that she has a question, he's technically the one who's going to answer the question. He's technically the one who's being paid. He's technically the one who is the supervisor in charge. And this way, by having a nominal male head of the Hashkacha process, you're able to satisfy even the opinion of the Rambam. So that's what Rav Moshe writes, and that's what Rav Moshe recommends. But since Rav Moshe let the cat out of the bag, which he said that there might be room not to always follow the Rambam in extreme circumstances, so he was duly attacked by Rabbi Amzel, who was the editor of the Yachon HaTorah HaMa'or at the time, and he wrote, we don't have a copy of what he wrote to Rav Moshe. From Rav Moshe's response, you get the sense that whatever he wrote was pretty strong. And he asked him already, he apologized to Rav Moshe that he was writing so forcefully against him, but he said that Rav Moshe was allowing for the possibility that people would start appointing women to all kinds of positions of authority, like to become, president or prime minister of Israel, or something, terrible like that. So Rav Moshe said, first of all, the people who deal with the government of Israel don't ask the shilas to us, so we don't really have to worry, you know, what they do. If they do something, it won't be because I published the tshuva, you know, saying that there are those who disagree with the Rama. And then the other complaint was, who knows, maybe they'll start appointing women to become presidents of shuls, become presidents of synagogues. So Rav Moshe writes very interestingly, you can, it's all in the materials, you can debate exactly what the meaning of Rav Moshe wrote, but Rav Moshe, this is in Yoredei Achelik Bei Simen Memhei, so Rav Moshe writes that particular concern that you have is that there's going to be a mikshol that will come out of this. He writes that he does not think that one has to worry about the mikshol in this type of a circumstance, because since all the poskim who will deal with this type of situation are aware of the fact that the Rambam has his particular opinion, so therefore that will be kedai to prevent any type of a mikshol or any type of a miscalculation to result as a result of what it is that he published in his tshuva. He says that abate kinesios and mosto shemisnagim apiderach haTorah lo yasu b'lo aros rab mufak umemela sagi lazek amshita saramam sholinos isha. So he says, therefore, it will be sufficient that the Rambam wrote shelo limnos isha. Now, if he doesn't write umemela sagi lazek amshita saramam shelo yimnu isha, that don't worry, they'll never appoint a woman to this type of position because of the Rambam. He says, the fact that the Rambam's there and the Rambam says shalolim nosisho, the Rambam says you're not allowed to appoint a woman, so they'll take that into consideration. I think, you're welcome to disagree with me. I think that what Moshe was saying is, you know, chinami, we can't deny what's out there. There's the Rambam. There are those who are choking with the Rambam. Of course, you must take the Rambam into consideration, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all of these positions are going to be permanently or in every single situation off limits to a woman. It's just that those who are responsible for the halachic decision making, of course, will take the Rambam b'toch ha-cheshbon. Now, part of that cheshbon has to be, number one, is something a position of srara? Sometimes there are different types of presidencies of shuls. It might be a presidency of a shul where the president has a lot of authority. Might be a presidency of a shul where the president doesn't really get to decide anything. Everything's decided by a particular gevir who's the one who has all the money. Or everything is decided by the board. Or everything is decided by the rav because, you know, he owns the shul. Or, you know, every single shul has a different type of a dynamic. So it's not 100% sure being president of a shul is a big position of svara. That was a big dispute between two members. It's also in the materials of the Beis Din in Philadelphia. Rabbi Brisman and Rabbi Dov Aaron Brisman and Rabbi Aaron Felder. There was a case where there was a question as to whether a ger could become president of a synagogue or whether that was considered to be sror. It was a ger. Everyone agrees it's not allowed to be appointed to a position of sror. So that's the Gemara. So Rav Dov Aaron Brisman wrote a tshuva saying he doesn't think that nowadays being president of a synagogue constitutes srara. It's a limited position only for a few years, and everything is subject to the board, and you don't really have control over what anybody does, and therefore he thinks it should be permissible. And Rav Aaron Felder, who's a member of the very same Beis Din, wrote a tshuva in a Sheila Saron, in which he basically held that, you know, lays dain soch panim, that this was not a question that even required any kind of rigorous analysis, that it was so obvious that being president of a synagogue carries with it authority with respect to what to do with monies and things of that variety, that of course it should be off limits to a gear. But we see that this question of whether presidency of a synagogue or other types of positions constitutes srara could itself be subject to dispute. And then the next question is, let's say it is srara, is there any wiggle room? So there might be some wiggle room in different types of situations. And certainly says Rav Moshe that there's no question at all that if you had a question as to whether to appoint a woman who was a Yira Shemayim, Or, on the other hand, the only other male candidate who was suitable was somebody who was not a Yari Shemayim and was not a Shomer Mitzvos. So he said that Ubarur Shim Yizdamin Beis Amalkam Shirotzim Limnos Leis Aminoi Rak O Ishu Kofel Abal Averus. You have a choice between either a man who's a Kofel and a Baal Averus. So Isha Keshera V'yashulipal Shloyinu Shumekam Yen. You have to pick one of them, at least Kasher, and there's no Ish Kasher available. Obviously, you should appoint the woman. So, Rav Moshe presents you with a circumstance in which it would be perfectly appropriate to appoint a woman, even to a position that would be considered to be a position of a sorora under those circumstances. And one would have to analyze every single case. But part of what needs to be analyzed is also the tznius question. There are certain types of roles in which a woman has to be catapulted more to the public stage. And since we do have tznius concerns, so that's something that has to be bar b'tocha cheshbon as well. Even when Rav Moshe, for example, was asked as to whether it's appropriate to have a woman give a public shiur in a shul, if a woman is a big tamidat chacham, she knows how to learn properly, and she can give over shiur properly, is that something that can be done in a shul? And Rav Moshe writes that he thinks that even under those circumstances where it could be edifying for everybody to hear the shiur, that it's not something that should be done within a shul. So that one has to also take into account the considerations of tznius. And finally, of course, in every single situation, because it is so nuanced and does so much depend upon the nature of the position, the norms of the community, the suitable candidates who are available, and a host of slippery slope considerations, it requires mesora, which means that one has to consult with Gedolmik, Sam Sofer, as a tshuva that is quoted by Rav Schechter in his famous essay in which he writes why women's minyanim are prohibited, Tzilach Bikrei Atzon. She quotes the Ksam Sofer as saying, you look in among the greatest Gedolim in the Gemara, whenever there was a difficult question, they never relied upon their own judgment, and always sent to all the Chaverim, which Shua Barab Yawaits, Kavachomer Benoshel, Kavachomer, with respect to us and with respect to all of these issues. So all of that has to be taken into account. Same thing, there are poskim disagree about whether Sarara is applicable for one woman over other women. Say it's a question of being a principal of a women's school. So Rav Moshe happens to hold being a Rosh Yeshiva is not even Svara. That's why he holds that a Ger is allowed to be a Rosh Yeshiva, because he holds that a Rosh Yeshiva, you don't have any control over Baal HaBatim. But let's say you have a position of leadership over Baal HaBatim, but it's all a women's club, or it's a women's or it's a women's educational institution. So do we say that in such a situation there wouldn't be a problem with Svara? So Rav Aryeh Grosnas, the Lev Aryeh, held that it's not a problem with Svara, and others say, no, why should you distinguish necessarily in that particular fashion? Now, it happens that the Rav, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik Zatzal, had a position about this which takes this entire analysis a little bit of a step further, and that is that the Rav held that even if a position is not Svara, if it's a public minoy, it's a public appointment, that's also problematic. Now, where did the Rav get this from? The Rav says this is true with respect to the limitation of women when it comes to Sarara. It's not true when it comes to the limitation of Gerim. Gerim can't be in a position of Sarara, but they can be in a position of Minoy, says the Rav. So if they're appointed to a position of, appointed to let's say, to be a Shochet. So a Ger could be a Shochet, because it's not a position of Sarara, but if it's a public role, so then that's something which would be off-limits to a woman, but not off-limits to a Ger. So why is this? Is that you don't really find this philosophically explained. If you look at the Shiurim that Rabbi Konigsberg published, or the Rav in Yerideya, so the first Shiur in Yerideya, is that Machlokas Mechab and Ramah, to whether women can Shech. The Mechab says yes, the Ramah says the Minig is not to. The Shach says and that we have a that the kasha that's asked in the Beis Yosef is The fact that it's a minhag not to, lo meinu ein oraya. The fact that we never saw a woman shech doesn't mean she can't shech. He says, well, so maybe when it comes to minhagim, we say lo meinu ein oraya. So the Rav explains what's going on. The Rav says that you know, it used to be, it's based on a korbo also, that women used to be able to shecht because shechting was private. People used to shecht in their backyards. But once shechting was taken away from being a private enterprise and you appointed somebody to be a shochet a'ir, and it became a position of minoy, that's when this minhag developed for women not to be shochtos, because it's not so that the minhag developed that they couldn't be shochtos, it's just that once the minhag developed, that being a shochet became a position of minoy, so at that point in time it became off limits to women. So according to the Rav, even if a position is not sarara, if it's just minoy, that also would be problematic for women. So one could argue, according to that approach, even if you said being president of a shul was not srara per se, and therefore would be permissible to a ger, alav of dov aram brisman, maybe it's still minoy. And maybe, therefore, it would be problematic according to the Rav. So you have, you know, all of these different shades of nuance based on the different positions. Rabbi Bleich writes in Contemporary Halachic Problems that he thinks it's legitimate for a woman to be a board member in a shul, because board members certainly have no srara. An individual board member can't act by themselves. They have to act in concert with others. And if anything, it's what he says, it's just a minoy shel kavod. It's just a word, it's a srara shel kavod. It's a srara shel kavod, he says, is not off limits to a woman. In order to be off limits to a woman, it has to be a srara of authority, not just a srara where you have some sort of an honorific position. Now, what about serving as a rav? Or as a yuetzet halacha? So everybody knows that a woman can't be a rabbi, but maybe she could be a rabba. Can a woman be a maharat? Can she be a rabbi? I don't know what these things mean. So all these things are just different ways of saying rabbi. So the bottom line is, can a woman be a rabbi or not? So here's where it's very important to differentiate between the first three elements that I mentioned to you of taking into account sarara, taking into account tznius, taking into account Misorah, and also incorporate a vital fourth element that can't be forgotten in the mix. And that is sometimes there are technical halachic limitations on what a woman can do. Like, for example, the Torah says, Ve'amdu shnei anashim lifnei Hashem, anashim lo nashim. Whether you understand or you don't understand the gzeiras hakasuv, you have a gzeiras hakasuv that a woman can't be an aid. She can't serve as a witness, meaning that if I have a get, a woman can't, and a woman is one of the witnesses to the get, so it's not a kosher get. I have a kiddushin, and a woman, she could be the frumest, most knowledgeable woman in the world. But if she's one of the eidim for the kiddushin, so then the kiddushin is not valid. That's a gzeiras hakasuv. There's also a halacha of that, that's an eidah of a darsha b'kiddusha based on psukim. We learn from the Meraglim, that for a minyan, you need 10 adult males. A woman cannot count for a minyan. There are certain technical halakhic things that are just off limits for a woman, not as a matter of figuring out how to apply hashkafic norms or how to apply the meaning or scope of a sarara, whether you're going to hold like the Rambam or hold like other Rishonim. But there are things where, just as a matter of technical, legalistic halacha, they are off limits to women. So, for example, with the question of being a dayan. So Tosfos asks in a number of questions throughout Shas, how can it be that Devorah, the shofetis, served as a shofetis? How could she have served as a dayan when we know the women are psula lahayi, and we have a general principle called apostle lahayi, apostle ladun? Someone is possible to be a witness, they also can't serve as a dayan. And in fact, the Yerushalmi says explicitly, since a woman can't be a witness, she also can't be a dayan. So Tosfos gives a number of different answers. One answer is, that principle may not apply to women. It may only apply to men. But we don't hold like that answer. That's one of the answers. Another answer is, Devorah was different because she was appointed al pi dibor, that everybody was mekabel Devorah. A third answer is that Devorah didn't paskin, she didn't judge, she didn't adjudicate cases. She was just melamed islam dinim. She would just teach them the dinim. So which of these answers of Tosfos do we accept halacha l'maaseh? So if you look in Shulchan Aruch says, Isha psula ladun. A woman is not allowed to serve as a dayan. The Vilna Gaon quotes from the Yushami. That's the way that we paskin, that a woman cannot serve as a dayan. We don't accept the first the teretz of Tosfos, that may not be applicable to women. A woman is not acceptable to serve as a dayan. We assume that's part of the Xeris HaKosuv. Since a woman can't be an aid, therefore she can't be a dayan. End of story. Once you say the woman can't be a dayan, the whole institution of smicha was fundamentally created to appoint dayanim. That was the whole idea of being musmachim, is that you'd be able to serve as a dayan. So even nowadays, how do we adjudicate cases? It's an extension of the original smuchim. The whole idea of smicha, you look in the Rambam, was, the Rambam even says this explicitly, it's not that you put your hands on the person, you call them Rebbe, you call them Rabbi. It says, you tell them, now you can adjudicate cases. You could sit as a dayan. So even though smicha bizman hazeh is not a hemshech of the original smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's essentially meant to be an extension based on principles of shlichusayo, based on principles of the institution of smicha. It's meant to be a hemshech of that idea. It's meaningless to speak about the institution of smicha independent of the institution of dayanus, being eligible to serve as a dayan. So as a technical halachic matter, when you talk about appointing somebody to be a musmach, independent of all of the other technical, you know, considerations of, you know, the notion of having somebody who's going to be extremely limited in terms of what they're going to be able to do, whether from a halakhic perspective or from a svar perspective or from a tznius perspective, from a purely halakhic legal perspective, it is simply impossible to speak about the category of smicha, of any type of a variation of smicha in the context of women. So therefore, I feel like in a way that's almost like a red herring. It's almost like, you know, an issue which is distracting to the core issues when we speak about women's roles. That's simply something which, in my opinion, is off the table. However, at the same time, what is clearly codified lahalacha, you look at the Piskei Tshuva and Simin Zayin, Tachoshim Mishpat, Sefer Chinuch has this as well, is the teretz of Tosfos, that it was okay for Dvarah to be melamedes lehem dinim, and that it's okay for an Isha Chachama to be melamedes dinim, to be able to paskin in terms of hara on some level. So therefore, if you do have a woman who is qualified in terms of her knowledge of halacha, so then it's possible to speak about a woman serving in the role in which she can afford instruction to those who want to know what to do in the context of halacha. And that is, if you look at the materials, you'll find that explicitly quoted in the Piskei Tshuva. The Piskei Tshuva says, "Afti isha psula ladun mikol makam isha chacham meyakoda lahoros hora'a." She can be serving the horos hora'a. Now, this would be a justification for the modern day creation of these types of roles for women. For example, women who master the area of taras and mishpacha in order to be able to give instruction to those women who sincerely want to be able to keep halacha in the realm of taras and mishpacha. So that if it's a role which meets all of these criteria. Number one, it's not also from a technical halakhic perspective, this wouldn't be. Number two, it would conform with tznius considerations, and namely that the woman wouldn't be in a public platform on a regular basis. She would just privately be helping women navigate issues of taras hamishpacha. Number three, as Rav Moshe points out, everything that's done has to be done with a sense of sincerity. It's for the purpose of furthering Yiras Shamayim, not diminishing it, for the purpose of enabling people to more seriously and responsibly keep halacha, rather than to encourage them to reject halacha. And finally, one would also, in each community, in each setting, figure out how to do this in a way that doesn't contradict issues of sarara. So again, it just being able to answer questions doesn't seem like it poses a sarara problem. However, one does have to reckon a little bit with the Rav's notion of minoy, that one would have to have these positions done in a way where there perhaps you avoided some of the fanfare associated with Minoy. That's something that would have to be considered at least the Fuanes Choshesh for the opinion of the Rav. And also, there's a Tosus in Yevamos that indicates that perhaps the best way to structure this so that you avoid any types of Sroro or Minoy considerations is the way that many communities do it, where just like in the Tshuva of Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe writes about how a woman could be a mashkicha if ultimately there is a Rav who is officially in charge of the hashkacha. So here too, the way that many communities set it up is that the Yoetzet Halacha works under the framework and the guidance of the local community Rav. So that there's an understanding that's worked out between the Rav and the Yoetzet Halacha about which what she answers directly, what she presents to the Rav, but ultimately everything is coming from the Rav. Might be coming through her because women are more comfortable turning to her, but it has to ultimately be coming through the Rav. And the reason I mentioned Tosus in Yevamos is because Tosus in Yevamos adds one word in the Teretz that Tevora wasn't a Shofetis, she was just Melamedis Lahem Dinim. So Tosus there says, El Melamedis Lahen Sheyadunu. She teaches them Sheyadunu so that they will know how to paskin themselves. They will know how to adjudicate themselves. So the word Sheyadunu might also be indicative of this type of approach, that the framework to be created is that ultimately you do have a Rav, a type of authority that has the Dayanus authority, Sheyadunu, but that a knowledgeable woman is helping to guide those who would gain from turning to her through the process with the understanding that the ultimate halakhic authority resides with the Rav. A bottom line consideration in all of these different types of positions is, are you enhancing halacha through creating a framework for knowledgeable women to contribute their talents in this fashion, or are you undermining halacha? It seems to me, in the context of Yoetzet Halacha, it could be done, obviously should be done, in a fashion which enhances the observance of halacha, and therefore has the potential of being a very positive development for our community. For certain types of other positions, which are clearly simply an attempt to thwart the time-honored tradition and halakhic tradition, that smicha is an illustration of the suitability of a person to serve as a dayan. If you create roles which are quasi-rabbinical roles for women, so it seems to me that has much more the appearance and the effect of undermining halacha. Just like, for example, a woman can't be a shliach tzibur. So you're going to try to create situations, say, well, we'll create something where it looks like a shliach tzibur, but we're going to make it in such a way that she's not really being a shliach tzibur, like the way that some of the women's minyanim would, since they knew that a woman couldn't be called up for an aliyah, so they would just have her not say birchas haTorah until she's standing in front of a sefer Torah, and then she would say birchas haTorah at that point in time. So number one, you lose Baruch Hu, which is perhaps the most important part of the bracha, as Rav Shechter points out in his article. But number two, it creates misconceptions, and it also creates the potential that those misconceptions will develop into realities of absolute violations of halacha, which you begin to see nowadays of places, I think they're called partnership minyanim, I'm not sure, I don't know too much about them, where supposedly you have women who are being called up for aliyot, which is something which is against the halacha. The Gemara in Megillah Daf Chav Gimel says that even though called only minyan shiva, women's nonetheless not allowed to be called up imnei kavod atzibur. The Rambam doesn't give the preamble. The Rambam just says a woman can't be called up imnei kavod atzibur. This is a halachically codified norm of tznius. That part of our application of tznius is that a woman doesn't get called for aliyos. You'll argue there's a Mordechai in Gittin that talks about an Ir Shekula Kohanim and possibly filling out the slate of Aliyos with women because it's an Ir Shekula Kohanim. So next time you come up with an Ir Shekula Kohanim, so we'll talk about it, but I don't think that we have that scenario. And secondly, that's not the normative halacha. The Bach in Simen Nun Gimel says that Kavod HaTzibur is not waivable. I had a tzibah that said, we'll waive our kavod tzibah and give aliyahs to women. They don't have the right to waive kavod tzibah. No norms of halacha that are developed based on principles of tznias are not waivable even by an entire tzibah. And therefore, this is something that has to be carefully safeguarded. I was friendly with some of the individuals who, because, you know, in my various travels in life, so I've come across a lot of a very broad spectrum of individuals. Baruch Hashem, I think I get along with it with everybody, as to the best of my ability, from the far right to the far left. I like everybody. So some of my friends at the time who were with me at Yale were involved with what was called the Finkelstein Minyan at that point in time. It was considered to be a quasi-semi-Orthodox Minyan, but it started in like in the home of this fellow who was a chancellor or a major figure for the Jewish Theological Seminary. That's why it was called the Finkelstein Minyan. That was his name. So in that minyan, it eventually evolved into some shul which is, I think, outside of the Orthodox community, but calls itself halakhic. I'm not exactly sure, but they were toying with the idea of having a woman lead the services for Kabbalah Shabbos. So they, since they respected me, they asked me what I thought of it at the time. So just for the record, I said no. They didn't listen to me, but I said that a woman should not serve in that capacity, because any type of role in which somebody is standing in front of the Amun and serving the capacity, whether it's the most integral part of the tefillah or whether it's a secondary part of the tefillah, nonetheless, that's a role of Shliach Tzibur. The role of Shliach Tzibur personifies exempting a kehillah for a davar shebikdusha. One cannot exempt a kehillah for a davar shebikdusha unless one is an adult male, and you create terrible misperceptions. So therefore, there are certain territorial areas, which I believe are sacrosanct, but one has to be extremely careful, because being flexible, number one, is often a violation of halacha, and number two, it creates an atmosphere which pushes the envelope towards a greater slippery slope and compromise of other halachos. And sometimes the tension is not so easy to navigate. These have been areas up until now in which I think that the terrain was more clear. However, I'll give you two illustrations of areas where reasonable minds have differed. One is with respect to women reciting Kaddish, and the other is with respect to the celebration of Bas Mitzvah ceremonies. So with respect to women saying Kaddish, you have a tshuva going back a few hundred years ago already from Yair Bachrach, or the Chavos Yair, in which he says that he doesn't believe this is in the same domain of Dava Shivik Dusha. It's just considered to be an Eloi Nishmas Hames for a son based on a Zohar to say Kaddish to his father. It was a case where somebody was dying and he didn't have any sons. He asked his daughter if she could say Kaddish, not even in the shul, just for learning sessions that would take place in their home after his Petira. And the Chavos Yair writes that, strictly speaking, he thinks that just like it is an Eloi for the Neshama, if the son says Kaddish, it would also be if the daughter says Kaddish. But, Kedesh Lo Yechalshu Minhage Yisrael, he writes, he's worried that it will cause a weakening of the sanctity of Minhage Yisrael if you allowed women to do this. Therefore, the Chavos Yair did not allow this. Now, if you fast forward a couple of centuries, Rav Henkin, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, who was really the foremost posek in America before Rav Moshe Feinstein, was asked the same question. And Rav Henkin writes in an article for Hapardes that I published in these materials. So Rav Henkin writes that im habas tavali spala be'ezvas nashim mitakshim maser dusha shabbos kashis etaros etznius, that if it's clear that the woman is not looking to undermine halacha, but it's a paradigm of kedusha and the tznius of a bas yisrael, she calls zehemi karim etakos loma gam kaddish b'fnei anoshim, and she wants to say kaddish in front of the women bisman she'omim kaddish b'fnei kesakneses shel hanoshim, at the same time that the men are saying kaddish efshar she'ein kepeda. This was the great innovation, the great bombshell of Rav Henkin, Efshar She'en Kepeda. When a gadol like Rav Henkin says Efshar She'en Kepeda, that's equivalent to anybody else proclaiming it from the rooftops. So Efshe She'en Kepeda was pretty much enough for everybody. Once Rav Henkin said Efshe She'en Kepeda, that was understood Heter Gamor. That became the normative practice. It became the normative practice because, number one, you had Gedolim like Rav Henkin involved in thinking it through and making sure that this wouldn't be problematic. Number two, the fact that he went out of his way to indicate that we're talking about a woman who is doing this for motivations of Kedusha and of Tznius, that's what we're talking about. So he says that in these types of situation, Kedei Lahavi Koras Ruach LeHaNiftar, that Efshe She'en Kepeda, especially, or as long as, you have a man who's saying Kaddish in the men's section. And this has become, I think, the prevalent practice in many modern Orthodox shuls, maybe even some who are a little more to the right. I'm not sure how far this has gone, but Rav Henkin set the yardstick for how far one can carry this principle. But even here, this particular tshuva Rav Henkin met with opposition. Rav Shlomo Warman, Zichrono Livracha, he just passed away a couple of months ago, wrote a tshuva. He was a big talmud of Rav Eliezer Silver, a Rebbe and Hank in Long Island. So he wrote a tshuva in his Sheiris Yosef, in which he looked at all the poskim over the centuries who were meiko. Says they were only meiko with respect to banos ketanos, who were like 5 or 6 years old. But not with respect to banos gedolos, where he thinks there's more of a tznius concern. And number two, he also was worried about the ripple effect, the slippery slope of those who would use this to tear away at other minhagi Yisrael, like the Chavos Yairot. So interestingly, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in a sefer, it's not a well-known sefer, published by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik called O Yisrael Yosef Bini Achai, has a little paragraph on this, and he writes like this. He writes, "Venira Aksha, Shekama Anoshim Anoshim Yisrael Lokmen Be'ad Shivoy Anoshim Lumas Anoshim." Since you have a lot of men and women who are fighting for the equal rights, Biakasim Aliyos, that they should get Aliyos, even though it's counted to Halacha B'Shu Anoshim, Imkein Gama Rabbanim Acharedim Yimanu Isha Malom Akadish, V'malkom Shiyeshne Efsharos She'ayidei Zeh, he says that if we would stop the women in these circumstances where we would be mechazik, we would be strengthening the arms of those who are looking to undermine halacha and causing these individuals to maybe leave the frum community and to situate themselves elsewhere, so under those circumstances, it's absolutely prohibited to stop a woman from saying Kaddish. If you're worried that she might otherwise leave the community, because if the halacha, in fact, does allow for the flexibility, and then by being machmir, you're going to actually alienate them from the community and prevent future generations of a frumkeit as a result, so then you have to take that into consideration as well. And that's a similar motif in the discussions about allowing bas mitzvah celebrations. Rav Moshe was asked about that, and he said, bas mitzvah celebrations, don't get me started about bar mitzvah celebrations. Rav Moshe was not a big fan of the way in which these celebrations were conducted, which was not with an emphasis towards shmiras and mitzvahs or tznius in general. I remember, you know, growing up in the 1970s, people used to have disco party, bar mitzvahs, you know, all kinds of strange things, you know. I mean, want to really provide an impetus for people, you know, to leave the religion. That's a good way of doing it. So Rav Moshe said that if anything, you could have a birthday party, but just have it in the home and don't make it into a whole big mitzvah event. Somebody asked, but she's becoming, it's a celebration that she's becoming chayeves and mitzvos, and now she's a mitzvah ve'ose. Doesn't that warrant a celebration? Rav Yosef made a big celebration when he found out that the blind people are chayeves and mitzvos. So he's a mitzvah ve'ose. So Rav Moshe said, that's only for a boy. It's like obvious, because now we can lead the tzibur and things like that. For a girl, you can't really tell, because there's nothing that she does differently. So therefore, he wasn't impressed by that argument. But on the other hand, the Sri Deish writes that nowadays, he's writing a number of decades ago, but still nowadays, essentially, where you have to be worried that if you don't inspire women from a young age and give them the same amount of fanfare as a boy when they reach the age of mitzvos, maybe they won't be so excited about reaching the age of mitzvos that it is appropriate to have such a celebration. I there's a concern of shalyachake, sahuk, saminim. The Gemara in Chulin has such a notion that this is coming from impure sources. The whole bas mitzvah celebration idea supposedly came from the person who formed the Reconstructionist movement, never mind that he was an alumnus of this institution. But it was somebody who, you know, was clearly not a champion of Orthodox practice. So he says, well, for that reason, it's good enough to follow, listen to follow one caveat of a motion, not hold it in a shul. Hold it in the social hall next to the shul, Sri Yosef was fine with, but don't hold it in the shul. And then you have a Rabbi Yosef, who says, what kind of shlo yachakes saminim do you have to worry about over here? This is something that we in the Sfada community have been doing for centuries. Something that he claims was endorsed by the Ben Ish Chai and others, that of course you celebrate a woman's emergence into mitzvahs. So much depends on the context of the community. Is this something which is being pushed for purposes of furthering an anti-halakhic agenda or from anti-halakhic sources? Is it something or which is coming from a good place? And regardless of where it's coming from, is it something that is appropriate to do in order to be mechazek the women so that they will have more of a love and an affection for Torah and mitzvos, or something which will drive them away? So Rabbi Twersky points out that you have to be, that one of the problems potentially is, let's say that there's a bat mitzvah celebration, but everything about the bat mitzvah celebration is celebrating things that the woman will never be able to do halachically. She's going to read from the Torah, she's going to read Avto, she's going to, everything that she does are not things that represent the traditional role of a woman. So that's also something to be mindful about. So one has to always calibrate in these types of situations what type of ceremony, what type of practice is consistent with halacha, and number two, going to lead to a greater observance of halacha rather than a diminished respect for halacha and for the Talmidei Chachamim and the Baalei Mesorah, who are transmitting certain traditions of what constitutes appropriate male practices and what constitutes appropriate female practices. In general, with the whole idea of tznius, it's important to recognize that it's not just that we want to maintain the tznius in terms of the women's roles. We want to maintain a sense of tznius in terms of how we view what our attitudes are towards having public roles, towards having leadership positions. You know, I think that the fundamental message of the Gemara in Horios about Rabban Gamliel, when Rabban Gamliel wanted to bestow a position of leadership on Rabbi Yehuda Chasta and Rabbi Yochanan ben Gugado, because he found out that they were needy, impoverished Talmidei Chachamim. So he invited them to positions of leadership so they would have a little bit of a parnasa, and they didn't want to accept it. So he said to them, you know, you think you think I'm giving you Sra, I'm giving you Abdus, I'm giving you servitude to give you a rabbinic type of position. So everybody always laughs. It's a nice joke. But I think that the message of that Gemara is that in reality, Rabban Gamliel was mollifying them. In other words, he wanted them to accept the position. He was saying, don't worry, it's not sro, it's not leadership, because in our tradition, we refrain from leadership positions. Moshe Rabbeinu fought with a Kodesh Baruch Hu for seven days to turn for 7 days to turn down a leadership position. That's not part of our hashkafa to want to assume these types of positions. The message is that when they were told, don't worry, it's avdus, and then they were much happier. Oh, in that case, then of course we'll accept it. That avdus is something that we can live with, but we don't look to be out in the public limelight. We don't look for leadership positions per se. That's a very much, I think, you know, one of the recurring messages. You know, they did a documentary a couple of years ago on changing roles of women in different religions. And they came to Yeshiva University to interview a couple of people so that they could get a little bit of the Jewish perspective. So they were trying to figure out over here in the public relations office who they were going to throw out, you know, to talk to these reporters. I don't know if I honestly have no idea if the documentary ever aired. But they decided to throw me out. They decided to have me as the sacrificial lamb, whatever, to give the interview. So I sat. The truth of the matter is that it was fine. I enjoyed it. But one of the things that I said This is totally my own chiddush, and maybe completely wrong. But you know, you give me a microphone, I'll say anything. So I was talking about the bracha of Shelo Asani Isha. A question, what does it mean? Well, a man gets up in front of an omen and he says Shelo Asani Isha. So it's understood in the context of all of the bracha Shelo Asani Goy, Shelo Asani Avi, Shelo Asani Isha, that it's giving gratitude for the fact that a man has more mitzvos to perform and to be mechazik a man at the beginning of the day. That even though it's sometimes difficult to perform all these mitzvos, we're saying that we consider it to be a good thing. It's an opportunity for a greater level of fulfillment of mitzvos, of our own kedusha, of coming closer to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. We're very grateful that we have the opportunity to perform all of these mitzvos, and that's why a woman doesn't perform. That's why a woman, as opposed to a woman, who doesn't have the same obligation to perform all of the mitzvos as a man, and that's the meaning of Shelo Asani Isha. It's not a disparagement of a woman per se. But what about the bracha she'asani kirtzono? When a woman gets up, she makes a bracha she'asani kirtzono. How come she doesn't say Shelo Asani Ish? I guess because a man has more mitzvos or whatever. Does it sound like she's just kind of acknowledging her lesser state by saying Shasani Kirtzono? Yeah, I can't make myself better than anybody else. So I'll just say, well, you know, at least Shasani Kirtzono. So that's, in fact, one interpretation. So it's like a Tzidka Din of sorts. I think Avudram has that. Yeshuas Yaakov is brought as saying that, no, it means that man was created only in consultation. Kaddish Baruch Hu had to say Nase Adam Mitzalmenu. He had to consult with the Malachim. Came to a woman, so it didn't require any consultation. Es Eloezer Kinect. Kaddish Baruch Hu did on his own. That didn't require any kind of elaborate meeting or anything. It was so obvious that a woman, it was appropriate to create a woman. So therefore, that was Shasani Kirtzono. That a Kaddish Baruch Hu did completely on his own. So I made the following suggestion. I said, you know, when a man gets up, it's an embarrassment. You know, when you get up in public and you're a shliach tzibur, that it's not a position that is coveted or something which is viewed as ideal per se from a halachic or hashkafic perspective. So therefore, the whole theme of a chazan, a shliach tzibur, when he gets up, is not to, you know, proclaim, you know, his own greatness, because it's a little bit embarrassing in that position. That's why when you say vidui maise, you talk about all the good things he did. It's supposed to be done, as Yerushalmi says, in a kol namach, in a lower voice. So you speak in the negative. You don't speak, oh, I'm this and I'm that, I'm so great, I have these mitzvahs, I'm so great, I have that, those mitzvahs, and so forth. Everything is negative. Shelo asani goy, shelo asani yavid, shelo asani isha. You don't put it in the positive, because since you're standing in front of everybody, so it looks like an arrogance. On some level. But a woman doesn't have that problem because she doesn't serve as a shliach tzibur. Therefore, since a woman doesn't have that problem, she's not serving as a shliach tzibur, so she can be much more affirmative about herself. She has sonic yitzano because she's not proclaiming it in front of Amma Eidah, in front of everybody. So that's, you know, part of the idea. She has sonic yitzano. It's a positive prat affirmation, something a man, you know, can't do because he sometimes has to serve as a shliach tzibur. But a woman, since she can always say it privately, so therefore we put the positive affirmation. So it's not something like, that I suggested during the course of that interview. If it ever shows up anywhere, maybe they'll air that part, maybe they won't, but, you know, at least I could share that with you. Other questions regarding, you know, specific halakhic practices nowadays of women who have, you know, making kiddush for other men, where just as a matter of tznius here too, the Mishnah Berurah has in a couple of places, yes, a woman is chayevus in kiddush the same as a man zoche v'shomer. But as a matter of sneers, it's Ila Bei Milsa for her to make Kiddush in front of a lot of men. So some say, okay, good, the Mishnah Berurah said she couldn't make Kiddush. Oh, didn't say anything about Hamotzi. So in certain places, the woman makes Hamotzi. So these practices, they just have to be examined. You know, even with Mikra Megillah, we say that it could be a woman, the Rosh writes, based on the Bahag, a woman might only be Chayavis in Shemiah and not in Kriya, and therefore she can't be Motzi Anoshim. The Kabbalah Nisanal understands from Atosas and Sukkah, Daf Lamed Ches, that she shouldn't be Motzi many women either. Even though she has the same Chayav as women, that it's appropriate to be Motzi maybe one woman, but not a whole group of women. That also creates, you know, maybe some sort of lack of tznius. The Mishnah Berurah brings that in the Shaar Tzion. Even with respect to her chiyuv, in Lechem Mishnah, so Mishnah Berurah brings down the Zeichel Anes. So you could say it's based on Afein Hayubiyoso and Ace. So a question as to the woman's obligation of Shalosh Sudos and Lechem Mishnah, Machlokes Tharad and Rabbeinu Tam, whether it's a Hemshech or whether it's an extension of the Hekesh Zokar Vishama, that she's obligated in all positive commandments of the day, just like Kiddush, so to Shrei Lechem Mishnah, and so to Shalosh Sudos. Or whether perhaps it's, as Rabbeinu Tam says, based on the principle of Afein Hayubiyoso and Ace. Well, just like with respect to Mikvah Megillah, the Afein Hayubiyoso and Ace is a different level obligation according to the Bahag, and the woman can't be Motzi a man. So if I say that her obligation to Lechem Mishnah is based on Afein Hayubiyoso and Ace, then maybe one could argue it's not in the same obligate level as a man. And maybe that practice also requires further examination. That's a question mark. I mentioned that to Rabbi Willig, who's published a couple of articles on Afein Hayubiyoso and Ace and different levels of obligation, and he agreed that there was an important ha'ara to consider. At the same time, there are certain things that we might think are, you know, questionable practices that are not. The Gemara says, Noshim Mizamnos Le'atzman. Women can make a zimin for themselves. The Vilna Gaon holds it's a chova. Then when they eat, they should make a zimin for themselves. Let's say you have five women at the table. You have a family of all women. And there's only one man at the table. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach held it's perfectly appropriate for the women to make a zimin and even for the man to answer, at least according to the Sefer Halichos Beisa, written published by his nephew. So one has to know the halachos in order to know those things that are off limits and those things that are perfectly acceptable and within halakhically legitimate boundaries, in order not to mistakenly or inadvertently drive people away. It's very important that since we have so many sincerely motivated women, that we have to make sure that we're careful in our analysis and our understanding of the halakha and our application of the halakha to be mechazek the women who are genuinely sincere and genuinely interested in increasing their mitzvah observance and the Yiras Shemayim and their contribution to the community in terms of teaching the next generations and in terms of instilling greater Yiras Shemayim into others, and to make sure that we don't foreclose appropriate opportunities, even as we're careful of avoiding any slippery slopes. We have to remember it was b'schus nashim sikanios shebeoso ador nigalu avosenim in Mitzrayim, as the Gemara in Sota says, that it was the schus of the women that we were redeemed in the past. I believe it's in the schus of the women will be redeemed in the future. None of us would be here without women. You have to understand that the contribution of the Benos Yisrael, the Nashim Sidkanios, is what keeps our nation going. And the last point that I would make before we head to Mincha is that on that note, just like the Nashim Sidkanios, Shebe Oso Hador knew what to do, we should not only have these discussions internally between ourselves. The Nashim Sidkanios of this door should need to be part of this discussion as well, so we can understand all of their strivings, we understand all of their yearnings, and we make sure that we address them appropriately and responsibly. Great to see you, Sam.
Thank you very much. Okay. Yes, this is the deal with the shit. What about the storm?